Hello, I am Donna Freeman, the founder of Yoga in My School, and this is the Yoga in My School podcast. I appreciate you coming and having a listen. Thank you for your likes, your shares, your comments, and your ratings. It truly is a blessing as it helps others to find us. The purpose of the Yoga in My School podcast is to empower you to share yoga and mindfulness with youth. Through the archives and this episode in particular, I know that you will receive inspiration, knowledge, and tools to help you do so. We also are big fans of building community, and we love finding people who are doing amazing things in the kids yoga community worldwide. So if you know of someone, or maybe you are someone who are doing something incredible and you'd like to share it, feel free to reach out. You can email me, donna@yogainmyschool.com, with ideas for upcoming episodes. Appreciate you listening. Have a wonderful day and enjoy this episode.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the show. My name is Donna Freeman, and I am the founder of Yoga in My School. And this is the Yoga in My School podcast, and we've been going strong for since 2009. And it's such a pleasure to spend another episode with you and to get into tools and techniques that help our children to be healthy and happy. Today, we're having a really interesting episode. We're going to be looking at yoga and mindfulness for children with hearing loss. Now, recently, I was teaching one of the Yoga in My School weekend workshops called Yoga for Preschoolers and Special Needs. And during that workshop, we look at how to teach yoga to children with ADHD, autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, and FASD, which are special needs and considerations that that we run into quite often as educators, as teachers, and facilitators. But I brought up during that weekend that I also teach at the Edmonton School for the Deaf, Tevi Miller School, and many people were surprised and shocked that I was doing that, and they had lots of questions. Basically, the big question was, how do you do that? And so I shared some of my techniques. And then recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I ran across a really interesting blog post on this exact topic of how to teach yoga and mindfulness for children with hearing loss. And it was done by Learning Lotuses. And I was intrigued because not many people have looked at this topic. And so I sent a quick message off to the author and the founder of Learning Lotuses, Miss Megan, and she so kindly got back to me. And so we're going to talk a little bit with Miss Megan Johnson of Learning Lotuses, who founded Learning Lotuses while she was doing her master's in education in Montreal. And her goal with Learning Lotuses is to improve the social and emotional well-being in education through yoga and mindfulness. And we're so pleased to have Megan joining us this morning. Good morning, Megan. How's
Hi,
it going?
Donna. Hi, Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. It's a lovely, brisk morning here in Alberta. It's about minus 15 outside. Yes, that would be Celsius.
That is very
so
brisk.
Yeah, so we're getting hit a little bit with some winter here early in the season. But you're joining us and you're phoning in from New Brunswick today.
I am. I'm originally from New Brunswick, so I'm here for a little bit. I've just completed my master's degree from McGill in Montreal, so I came back home to spend some time with my family.
Nice. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be teaching kids yoga?
Yeah, I started practicing yoga myself about 3 years ago, and I became certified to teach adults in 2015. I always knew that I wanted to expand into teaching children. I've worked with children my entire life, from summer jobs in high school to working with foster children before I started my master's degree. But it wasn't until I started my master's degree in education that I realized just how much social-emotional learning is missing. Of course, mm-hmm. having gone through the education system myself, I know that it can be stressful and that those feelings of stress and anxious and feeling overwhelmed, those are normal. But then I thought that that's sort of the problem with our education system, is that we've kind of made it so that if we're not stressed or anxious or overwhelmed, that we feel like we're doing it wrong or that we're not working hard enough. And we put all of this unnecessary pressure on ourselves. So I realized that while those feelings were normal, there wasn't enough being done with regard to teaching students and educators how to manage those feelings. The feelings themselves are normal, but we're not teaching our students how to explore those feelings and those thoughts and how to appropriately and effectively manage them. So while I was completing my master's, I completed a children's yoga teaching certification and a children's mindfulness teaching certification. I started emailing schools and companies, and it just kind of went from there. And I was very, very lucky in that I completed the last year of my master's degree by teaching yoga at the Montreal Oral School for the Deaf. And I actually wrote a book about teaching yoga and mindfulness to children with hearing loss as part of my master's degree.
Very cool. All right, so let's get into some of the subtleties within the hearing challenged community. So can you tell us, you know, what defines someone with hearing loss, and explain maybe some of the different degrees, like hearing loss, deafness, like where are we with those categories?
So someone is described as having hearing loss if any part of the outer, middle, or inner ear is damaged or not working properly. So this can be genetic, or it can be caused by an external factor such as an illness or even exposure to loud music. There are four different types of hearing loss, and within each of those types, there are five different degrees or severities of loss. So we're talking a really broad range of hearing loss, and you just never know, like when you encounter someone who has hearing loss, you have really no way of telling how, you know, how severe their loss is. So the severities of hearing loss can range from mild to profound. So mild hearing loss is typically people who have mild hearing loss have difficulty hearing children and soft-spoken people, and all the way to profound hearing loss, which is an inability to hear without hearing aids or hearing implants, except for very, very loud noises like an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so in terms of, with regards to some terms or maybe definitions, the terms can be a little bit tricky. They seem to change a bit, and what is politically correct or socially acceptable is always changing. There can also be some generational differences in terms. So for instance, my mom has hearing loss, so this is sort of an environment that's been familiar to me. It's, you know, I grew up with, you know, surrounded by that. And when I was a kid, my mom always used the term hearing impairment. So that's what I used as well. And it's only been the last few years that I stopped using that term. And now I personally use the term hearing loss. I feel more comfortable using that term because it's a broad term and it covers the various types and degrees of hearing loss. Whereas a term such as hearing impairment, a term like hearing impairment, the word impairment implies that something is broken and needs to be fixed, which can make people feel uncomfortable or feel this societal pressure to be quote unquote normal. So
I
away from that term.
Yeah, the subtleties.
Yeah. And it's, you know, just that one word can just trigger all these feelings of anxiety and feeling like you don't belong. And we definitely don't want that.
Exactly. So now let's get into the question, which is kind of the big question, is how do you do that? Right? So you're a yoga instructor, you're like, okay, great, I've been asked to teach some classes, and either there's, you know, everyone or a couple of individuals or even one individual, and it's been brought to your attention that there is a hearing loss involved, and so the big question is, oh my, how do I do this? So what are some tips and techniques, some considerations?
Teaching a population of hearing loss was a really big learning curve for me, and it was one of those things at the Montreal Oral School where I was teaching. All of the students there have hearing loss, so I think in that environment it helped me a lot because everyone had hearing loss. So I was teaching an entire class, and all the kids and even some of the educators had hearing loss. Whereas if you're teaching a class where only one or two people have hearing loss, it might be a little bit trickier. But I would say that the biggest consideration for a yoga instructor is the same as any other class, to just be mindful of that individual difference, to ask questions, make sure people are safe in their poses and comfortable in the space. So I always, you know, whenever I start a yoga class, I always say, you know, if you have any questions or if you have something that you feel like I should know about you as an individual, please come and let me know. Or even in the beginning of the class when we're lying in Shavasana, I'll say, you know, everyone has their eyes closed, so I'll say something along the lines of, if you don't want me to, you know, physically touch you during the class to help you with your alignment, please raise your hand. And then in this way, everyone in the class feels comfortable letting me know how they're feeling and what they're comfortable with, because nobody else can see them and everyone has their eyes closed. So I would say to the yoga instructor to do, if you know that you're teaching a population of individuals with hearing loss, to do a little bit of research on hearing loss. It's important that the instructor do what they need to do or ask the questions they need to ask to make themselves comfortable, because you're not an effective teacher if you're not comfortable with what you're doing. And sometimes this can be really uncomfortable, and it can be uncomfortable when we meet people who are, you know, slightly different than we are, whether it be hearing loss or loss of vision or limb. We're not really sure of what to do or how to act, and I think that's normal. I think we've all felt that way at one time or another. And one of the things I love best about teaching at the Montreal Oral School is that the kids were a constant reminder that that feeling of being uncomfortable is something that we create ourselves. So watching my students practice the yoga and play the yoga games and the mindfulness games, I realize that they're just kids and they're no different than any other kids, and they're comfortable with their hearing loss. So it's important that the yoga instructor be comfortable with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point, is just being comfortable, asking the questions that you need to ask so that you're comfortable, asking the questions that you need to ask so that they're comfortable, and just making it really available for the yoga and the mindfulness to actually do the work that they can do for everyone.
Right.
But you brought up something really interesting with that comment, and you're at the beginning of class and they're laying in Shavasana and their eyes are closed. And I can just hear a lot of our listeners going, yeah, but they can't hear you.
Right.
And so if we're into mild hearing loss, then that's fine. They can, you know, we're using our ocular implants and our hearing aids and those type of things to augment, or maybe one ear or one side, and we can arrange people to help with that. But how do you handle times when eyes are closed, like for example, in Shavasana or in, you know, eyes closed mindfulness activities?
Well, I never ever make my students close their eyes in Shavasana, especially when I was teaching at the oral school. For people with natural hearing, just to give a little bit of some side information, for people with natural hearing, our ears pick up sounds around us when we close our eyes, and our brain goes, oh, okay, everything is okay, or okay, something is wrong, I better wake up and see what's going on. So we hear those sounds and our brain signals us to wake up. But for someone with hearing loss, this doesn't necessarily happen depending on the degree of hearing loss and whether or not that person has a hearing aid or hearing implant. So people with hearing loss have to visually check their surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So I never make my students close their eyes. I encourage them to do so. So one of the things tell them to encourage them to close their eyes is I'll ask them if it's okay for me to gently touch their shoulder when it's time to come out of Shavasana or a closed eye meditation. You should always ask permission to physically touch someone in your class. So I always say, you know, if you want to close your eyes, if it's okay, I will just gently touch your shoulder when it's time to come out of Shavasana and come back to the class. So another thing is, if you spot someone in your class who has their eyes open in Shavasana, maybe it could be that they haven't disclosed to you that they have hearing loss. So whether or not someone has hearing loss, you know, they may be more comfortable keeping their eyes open, and you always want your students to be comfortable. So I would just simply ask them if they're okay, if there's something that they can do, something that you as a yoga instructor can do to help them. And another thing I like to do with my students or my kids that I teach is I take that time in Shavasana to read a guided imagery. So this way, at the oral school, all of the students had hearing aids or implants. So I knew that they could hear me a little bit. And of course, I was wearing an FM system. So there was, you know, I had a lot of help in terms of helping them to hear me. So this way, when you're reading the guided imagery, the students know that they knew that I was right there with them. And they trusted me as their yoga instructor. So they knew that I was there and they knew that I was looking out for them. So they were more comfortable closing their eyes because they were like, okay, Miss Megan's right here and she's not going to leave us. So it's okay if I close my eyes because if something goes wrong, she will let us know.
I'm the same. I often, you know, I'm like, if you want to keep your eyes open, keep your eyes open. that's just an optional a guideline. Yes, it may assist you to relax more, but it may not. It may be a trigger and make it actually more anxious. So I, as you do, leave it up to the student to decide how they would like to be in their Shavasana, in their relaxation. But I've also heard the tip of using a fan or something like that so that they feel a movement of air over their body. So I'm just not like a plug-in fan, people, but just like even a piece of paper, just fanning it over people, and then they can feel that and they know that that is the cue to open their eyes. And so that's another one. If your students are uncomfortable with touch, then that's another option I've seen employed with individuals with hearing loss.
Yeah, that's a fantastic tip.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, isn't that clever? Of course.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever thought of that. That is a very clever tip.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you kind of bring up a couple of things. The first that I'd like to address is FM system. So you said that you were wearing an FM system. Can you explain what that is? Because some people may not be familiar with it or how it works.
Right. So an FM system is simply, for me, for the yoga instructor, or for anyone wearing an FM system, it's sort of like a necklace. It's a little bit bigger than a necklace, and then it has just a little box. So how it works is it wirelessly connects to the hearing aids implant of those with hearing loss. So there's a little attachment, a wireless attachment that you would attach to, say, a cochlear implant. And that little wireless attachment connects to the FM system and the microphone that I am wearing so that the students can hear me better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've used these actually quite a bit in many of the schools here. In Alberta, because they find that just having the sound, a teacher's voice coming in throughout the room, so that there are actually speakers placed throughout the room, and they find that if the teacher's voice can be projected throughout the room, that it helps young learners to hear the instructions better, especially in classrooms like kindergarten classrooms and grade one classrooms that are really interactive, that the kids aren't sitting in their desk all day, that when the teacher says something and the kids can be wherever, that they hear the instructions better and will respond better. And so I've used FM systems for years, and I think that they're a wonderful tool for teaching and assisting hearing for all people. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, you want me to pay attention. You're not just coming from one direction.
Yeah, they really are a great tool. One of the downfalls of the FM system as a yoga instructor, you're wearing it around your neck. So sometimes I would find myself in class, in wheel pose, for example, or upward bow, that's what you call it. And the FM system is flying backwards around my neck and it's swinging around and I'm always trying to fix it. Or if I'm lying on my belly, then I always had to make sure I wasn't lying on top of it. So it does get in the way a little bit, but it's a really great tool.
Yeah, and your forward fold, right? All of a sudden, it's hitting you in the chin, kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's like okay, yeah, you know. But I think that as an aid, it's such a terrific aid that whenever somebody says, "Oh, can you wear this?" It's like, "Yep, sure, no worries. That's a really easy thing to do, and you make it work." Right.
Yeah, it's now, something so simple that a yoga.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's something so simple that a yoga instructor can do to make their students with hearing loss feel more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Just that augmenting of the sounds. All right. Now let's talk a little bit about physical placement, because I've done this and I often actually end up with physical placement with my students with hearing loss in my seniors classes. Because I'll have one or two individuals and they'll say, yeah, I'm deaf in my left ear or my right ear or whatever they've got going on. And so I'm like, okay, you need to sit over here so that your hearing side is closer to me, and that will hopefully assist you in being able to perform classes. And I found that just a simple which ear, sit over this side, it'll help you a little bit in being able to access the verbal cues that I'm going to give throughout the class. But what other maybe physical arrangements or placements that are organizing your class might you recommend?
I typically arrange the yoga mat in a circle for the kids, and I would stand either in the middle of the circle or at the front of the circle, if you can say that about a circle. I'm not sure there's a mm-hmm. front, but in a circle I found always worked very well. And the great thing about teaching at the Montreal Oral School is that the educators there knew the students very well, better than I did, and they were able mm-hmm. to help me place the kids in a way that someone who has a deeper, more severe hearing loss was facing me directly, so that the sound of my voice was facing them directly, or that they could lip read if lip reading was a skill that they knew. On a more general scale, I would advise anyone with hearing loss to let their yoga instructor know about this, so that they can be mm-hmm. placed in a spot that they feel is best for them, and that they're more comfortable in. And also so that the yoga instructor knows how to help with alignment cues or to help that person relax in Savasana. I always mm-hmm. encourage anybody with any sort of, you know, hearing loss, vision loss, anything at all, any sort of thing that they feel might impair or kind of hinder their yoga practice, to let their yoga instructor know. Even if it's a cold, a common cold, if you feel like you're going to need some help with some things, let your yoga instructor know. That's what they're there for.
Fabulous. Yeah, I always found that line of sight was important, right? And I do it with all my classes. I try to make sure that all my students can see me, but especially for those classes where we have hearing impairment, because they rely so heavily on that visual input.
Right.
And so line of sight, making sure that everyone is arranged so that they can see you, whether that's in a circle. I find a semicircle works really well as well. And so, like I said, just line of sight. Make sure you can see all your students and that they can see you.
Exactly.
All right. Now, that kind of gets into one topic that you address in your blog post, and that's the topic of sensory fatigue.
Yes.
Yes. This is a good one, right?
It is. I actually really love this topic, but I find it incredibly interesting. So it's something that I like to talk about.
Okay. Can you explain what sensory fatigue is and how it might relate to those with hearing loss?
Sure. So sensory fatigue is exactly as it sounds. It means fatigue or exhaustion from overstimulation of the senses. So in particular, for someone with hearing loss, listening fatigue is a big issue. It occurs because for someone with hearing loss, their brain has to work extra hard to catch all of the sounds and turn them into signals and information. So when we hear something, for someone with natural hearing, when we hear something, our brain turns that sound into a signal, and then it turns into information. So to decrease listening fatigue or sensory fatigue, you kind of want to limit your instructions. You don't want to overload your students or those with hearing loss with information. And this can be a little bit tricky as a yoga instructor. You know, you want to give as many alignment cues as you can, but in as little words as possible, especially for kids. If you talk too much, if you're teaching a population of children, they'll get bored and they'll get lost in your instructions if you're rambling on and on. So it's best to keep
I compare
it very
like
simple.
The Charlie Brown teacher.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if you're saying, no, exactly. If you say, like, lift your left leg, their left leg, or like, which one is the left one? And which, so mm-hmm. I always just say, you know, lift one of your legs and then lift the other one. So you want to limit your instructions. And that's something that comes with practice as a yoga instructor. You want to say as much as you can in as little words as possible, just to reduce that stimulation. Another thing is that music in your class, I've been to several music yoga classes where music is always playing in the background, and it's actually kind of one of my favorite things about going to yoga classes. But for a population of people with hearing loss, this can be very distracting. So I always try to have, if I'm going to have music in my class, I make sure it's instrumental, no words. Especially for kids, because if the kids know the words to the song, they're going to sing it. So I always make sure it's instrumental, and I always have it on before the students come in. So if it's on before the students come in, the music becomes white noise and it's not as distracting. Whereas if you turn it on, say in the middle of a class or after everyone is in and settled, it causes a stimulation that can cause a sensory overload. So always have it playing before the students come in, or not at all, if that's your style. Some people don't like music, so if you don't play music, then that's totally fine as well.
For me, I don't play music in the background of my kids' yoga classes. We'll sing music sometimes, or I'll put one on, like one song, if it's part of the activity that we're doing, and then it's off. Like, we don't need any extra stimulus here. You guys are already stimulated.
Yeah, exactly. It was always fun. I use music a lot for games, so like musical mats or yoga statues, that kind of thing. But in the background, it was a little bit nice. When I was teaching at the oral school, where I was actually teaching the kids, we would all go over to the local rec center, and there were sometimes some kids playing hockey there as well. So I would have a little bit of music on in the background just to take away from that and use it as almost like a focus tool so that the kids were focusing on our class.
Very cool.
So
many ways to use it.
Yeah, there's a ton of ways to use music in your class, and it can be a lot of fun, but it can be a lot of work and can be a little bit of an overload too. So we always want to be mindful of that. I always like to get my students, I call it shake out the sillies. So basically just shake your body all around, move all around, have a lot of fun. And it just helps the kids to expel some extra energy and focus on what you're doing as a class. So it kind of, everyone is just doing their own thing, and then we all come together, and it just reduces distractions and the listening fatigue. The more distractions there are, the more processing needs to be done, and the greater the fatigue.
Fabulous. So do you have any other ideas? So if you notice, if the teacher's kind of like, oh, wow, these kids are like, they're kind of on edge, whether they've got too much stimulus or they're just getting tired. Do you have any other techniques that or strategies that might help us to calm and soothe that sensory fatigue?
Yeah. Whenever I notice my students just being like really distracted or really just kind of not focusing on the yoga, I would just ask them if they wanted to have, we called it quiet time. It's called Shavasana quiet time. If they just wanted to have quiet time, and the response was always yes. It was never no. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, the kids go to school all day long. They work hard all day long. Their brains are working extra hard all day. And sometimes kids just need that quiet time. All kids need that quiet time. So, I mean, there were classes where I would teach the kids for about an hour, and there were classes where we spent, you know, 40 or 45 minutes just lying in Shavasana, because that's what they wanted, and that's what they needed. And when the first time that I did that, I had someone ask me, you know, well, that's not really yoga, and I said, yeah, it is yoga. It is yoga.
This is exactly what yoga is.
I said, you know, mindfulness is a part of yoga. It's a huge part of yoga. And it's, you know, yoga is about giving your mind and your body what it needs. And that's what they needed at that time, was just that complete quietness. And with that, I always encourage my students, you know, I always said, if you want to take off your hearing aid or take off your hearing implant, just place it in the corner of your mat or give it to me and I will hold on to it. And then that way it was complete quiet for them. There were no, you know, without their aids and implants, it was just complete quiet for them. And then, of course, I will let them know, you know, I will gently touch your shoulder if that's okay, when it's time for us to get ready to go. With taking out the hearing aids and implants, you want to make sure that this is okay. So I talked to the teachers about this prior to telling the students that they could take out their implants. You don't want to step on anybody's toes. You know, if they might have a rule where aids and implants are to be kept on at all times, or even the parents might have some rules. So you don't want to step on any toes there. So always make sure that it's okay. And I always,
all right, Megan, we're running out of time here. I know we could talk for a while longer. It's such a great topic.
I think we could.
But, okay, so check out Megan at learninglotuses.ca.com. What are you at?
.com.
All right. You guys, thanks for listening today. Please review and subscribe to our podcast. Find me on all the social media. And thanks for following and listening today. Namaste.
Namaste.